So you run a YouTube channel called Leave Me Alone, which is hilarious, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Glad you like the name.
My first question is actually something that I was talking to my friends about it as well. Is there a name for the hobby of, like, raising houseplants?
So everyone kind of calls it a different thing. Most people, if you talk to plant people, they'll say that they're plant parents. It's kind of like the main thing. Or most people just say they're into houseplants. I don't think there's one official term. But, yeah, most people go with their plant parents is kind of the unofficial term for it.
Is, like, gardening, that's separate.
That's like a whole separate thing, whole different subset of people. And I think that's the interesting thing about plants. You know, like, if you're not into it, I think everybody assumes, like, oh, it's all the same thing. But you've got, you know, the hydroponic people and the houseplant people and the gardening people. So, yeah, it's a whole little subset of something.
Yeah. I've watched your videos going into this, and I don't know anything. I've bought one succulent in my entire life, and I killed it within a week.
Okay.
I don't even know how that's possible to do, but that's what I did. So my green thumb is non-existent. However, I just dipping my toes in, you can tell this world is infinite. Like, it just goes in and it keeps going and going on, like, what you can do and different types of growing strategies and schedules. Like, it just seems insane to start.
You know, it's like so many hobbies that you get into where, like, you first get into it and you dip your toes in and you think, like, okay, I'm starting to get the hang of this. I'm starting to know it. And it's almost like the more you know, the more you realize that you don't know. And I think that's, like, so many things, right? But, no, it's so true that you said that. It's funny you brought up succulents, too. A lot of people think, like, oh, succulents are so easy. And, you know, I always feel bad when people say, like, oh, I can't grow anything. I think a lot of people they have a bad first experience. And, you know, I think for a lot of people, kind of just having and finding the right plant for them is really the important thing to get into the hobby.
Well, that's awesome. Yeah, and that's kind of what I talk about, too, because, again, complete beginner. I mean, hopefully after this conversation, you'll give me some motivation or inspiration.
Well, upgrade your plants over here into actual plants.
So with that, so, like, again, like, I know nothing about it. Like, you go to, you know, the plant section of any store, like, I'm lost. Like, the names of plants, it's just insane. Like, I don't know if they even section them off correctly or whatever. Like, it's a lot.
Well, that's the thing. You know, I think most people, you know, either they're at the grocery store, they go into Home Depot, whatever, and they walk down the aisle and, like, orchids, like, everybody sees the orchids at the grocery store. And I think so many people, they just see something that they're attracted to. They're like, oh, it's pretty, I love it. And people don't think, like, oh, is this plant actually something that's going to grow well in my house? You know, the first thing that we kind of said when we came in here, we're like, oh, it's a little dark in here. There's not a lot of natural light. And that's what I always tell people when they're getting into plants for the first time is, instead of just going to the store and saying, oh, this plant's cool, I really like this one, do a little research ahead of time and think about the space that you want to put it in, think where you want to put the plant. And that's going to end up, you know, kind of leading you down the path of what plant to get. And right off the bat, that's going to make it so much easier for you to have something in your house that's actually going to do well in your house, do well in the space that you want to put it in, instead of, you know, if you have something like a succulent in here and it's a little darker, you're kind of setting yourself up for failure right off the bat. So I always say that's, like, number one, is just kind of think about where you want to put the plant and then kind of work backwards and find a plant that's good for that space.
That's interesting. Well, so for placement, that's actually really cool. I've never even thought about that. So placement of a plant. Do you ever run into the conflict of, like, I really want it to be here, but
yes,
it won't grow correctly?
Yes, the time. That's, again, you know, as, like, a self-proclaimed crazy plant lady, I like to stick plants in every inch of my house. Mm. And I think that's, like, a big problem a lot of people struggle with. And, you know, for people in the community, I think it's like, oh, I need a grow light, I need this light. But you can really, like, any type of artificial light, you can supplement it with that, and that can be a big help. Nothing is ever really quite as good as that natural light coming in. But, yeah, I mean, if you have that spot in your house and you really just want something there to kind of green up the space, I always say you can put a light next to it, and that'll usually at least keep it going, if not maybe thriving, but it'll keep it alive.
I see. And is there any, I mean, obviously, yeah, you just said, like, daylight, obviously, from the sun is optimal, but, like, does any light work? Any, like, fluorescent light, LED, like, there's no difference?
Yeah, so that's the thing, you know, with marketing these days, people are so great at marketing things as a grow light, and this is the perfect light for your plants, and really it's going to come down to a couple things. So what type of spectrum is it, and how bright is that light? And that's, you know, going to depend. Kind of something interesting when you're looking for lights for your plants. Some people might think, like, oh, a green light because it's green, but actually, because the plant's green, the chlorophyll reflects back all the green light. So if you were to, like, put your plant under a green light, it won't grow at all. So the color is actually really important, but just, you know, kind of finding something that's bright enough for that specific location is really the thing that's most important.
Wow, that's amazing. Okay, this is exactly what I wanted to have you on, is getting in the weeds.
We're getting in the weeds. We're getting into the nerdy science stuff already.
I love it. Well, here, let me go back real quick, because I want to get to this as well. So this is a strange endeavor to me, right? So doing a YouTube channel and all this, can I ask like where this all started? Like how, when did you start like getting into plants, that kind of thing?
Yeah, so I'm originally from New York, and back when I lived in New York, I had a small collection of plants. I've always kind of been into it. Like you said, gardening's like a subset, and my whole family was always into gardening. Funny enough, my mom's the type of person, she's like, I can't keep anything alive, I kill everything. But I always was really into plants. I moved out to Arizona a couple years ago, and I started working from home when I moved out here. And, you know, I was living in this apartment. It was, like, kind of gray and dull. And I was, like, you know, in the desert. It's like, I need something to green up my space. So I kind of dove into it more, got more into it. COVID hit. As we all know, we were all trapped inside our houses. And I really just kind of, you know, got super into the hobby. And I was buying plants online. I was, you know, just acquiring a large collection. I thought, well, I might as well start making videos for it if, you know, I can't go out and I can't do much else. So that's kind of how the whole thing started, and it's just kind of taken off from there.
That's awesome. Wait, yeah. So when was the YouTube channel started?
Right around January 2020. So kind of like a little later than that, but yeah, right at the onset of COVID.
Oh, that's crazy. Yeah. And so with a channel like this, where it's like growing, it's slow, it's patient, right?
Yeah.
How do you put that in a video format to kind of keep it engaging?
Yeah, you know, for me on my channel, I kind of think of like content in two different ways. Like I do content that's kind of focused around teaching people and like very specific plants. I think about that as like really searchable content. And that's honestly been like the content that's grown my channel the most. And then on the flip side of it, there's like what I call the more passion content of like fun projects that I like to do. I like to do like these weird experiments with plants. I put plants in like all kinds of weird locations. I've like painted plants and seen if they've grown and all kinds of different stuff. But yeah, I kind of like divide my content into those two things of like, you know, like I said, kind of teaching and then also just like that fun off the wall stuff.
I love that.
Yeah.
Awesome. And so moving forward, is there any like crazy projects that you're excited to get going? Any maybe like specific plants, anything like that?
Well, you know, plants is like, obviously it's my channel's Leave Me Alone Plants. And I always love that. It's a great hobby for me. And something I think a lot of people on YouTube, when they're in a really niche channel, maybe struggle with, or maybe it's just me, but, I have like all these other interests outside of it. And I think right now what I'm trying to do is, start incorporating those other interests and kind of tying those into plants. So I recently got a 3D printer, and I've been making shorts and like incorporating that kind of content into my plant stuff. I kind of like to dabble in like cryptocurrency, so I always thought it would be fun to have like a sub-series of like crypto and cacti or something like that.
Cool.
But yeah, I think the next thing for me is kind of just taking it past just plants and starting to blend in some of those other hobbies and topics that interest me.
Yeah, I think that's important, honestly. I mean, same here, like small YouTube channel as well, that kind of thing. And I think it's important to, you know, make a YouTube about you, like what you're passionate about. Yeah. I don't think you need to arbitrarily take over and like and continue this road if you don't want to do that, or if you want to introduce other things. I think that should be perfectly fine.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And so going back to, again, let's call it plant parenthood, something like that. I feel like this is growing super rapidly as of recent.
Oh,
like
yeah.
I know so many people are getting into it. So many family members are getting into it just in the past, let's say not maybe even 3 to 4 years, like very recently, it's kind of just boomed.
Yeah.
Why do you think this hobby, this passion is thriving now versus let's say like decades ago?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny because I have a grandma and she's back in the 70s. Like people back in the 70s, there was like a huge boom of houseplants back then. I'm not really sure what it was back then, but you know, it kind of died off for a long time. And now of course it's back. COVID, again, it was really that driving factor. So many people were trapped inside their houses. They wanted to liven up their space, and that kind of started it for a lot of people. And I always say with plants, you kind of get down this rabbit hole. You start out and, you know, you have like one or two plants, and then, you know, it sounds crazy for people who aren't in the hobby, but it can become like a very, very niche, very expensive thing. Like there's people who will spend thousands of dollars on a single plant, and it's just wild. But, yeah, COVID was really the catalyst for that. And I think, you know, people, as time has gone on, it's just grown that collection. It's a very collectible thing. And it's, like you said at the beginning, it's kind of infinitely scalable in the amount of knowledge you can have in it and the amount of plants you could have in it. So yeah, it's easy to kind of start small and then just grow over time.
Makes sense. Can I ask what your house looks like? Is it overrun?
I like to say it's kind of like the Rainforest Cafe when you come to my house. So, I like to brag that, you know, the air quality is probably really nice in there. But, it's definitely very green. So, yeah.
That's amazing. Do you have any estimate on number of plants?
Oh,
is
God.
It dozens? Is it hundreds?
No, it's, if I had to guess inside right now, it's probably about like 150, which I know it sounds, to your average person, it sounds like a lot. It is a lot, actually, when a normal person comes into my house, they're like, wow, there's a lot of plants in here. But in terms of, again, like plant parents, I actually have like a pretty small collection. I mean, there's people with thousands of plants inside their house. So I know what I have, and I can't imagine taking care of thousands of plants. So more power to those people.
Agreed.
Yeah.
On that degree too, it's like, is there a thought of like interior decorating as well? Like, is there too many plants? Is that a thing? Is there a way to tastefully do this?
Yes. Oh man, that's such a big thing for me. And, I think there's like people who have different philosophies on it. Some people just like as many plants as they can put in their house, that's what they like. And that's great too. For me, I kind of see them as like, again, like an interior decorating piece. And I like to kind of be a little more curated with where I put them, a little more curated with how I display them. I love, you know, like kind of matching up different pots and kind of making it like more of a design element is instead of just like an actual greenhouse in there. But definitely. I think it's for a lot of people, it's a design aesthetic too.
Yeah. I like that too, that, you know, framed pictures, you don't have to like upkeep, you know what I'm saying? Like these things grow. It's like a moving space. It's breathing, it's living. And it's still like decorating the space that you're in. There's something really kind of zen about that.
It is. And I think for me, that's like one of the things I enjoy about it so much. I mean, every Saturday I wake up, I have my coffee and I just kind of walk around. I take care of the plants. I water them. And it is. It's a very zen experience. I think, some people, they think because they're bad at taking plants, it's like stressful. But once you kind of get into the flow, it can definitely be a really relaxing hobby.
Yeah, I'm in that camp. I'm the stressful camp. I'm like, if I get a goldfish, I'm like, oh, man.
I know.
Like, I don't know if I can keep that.
A lot.
Yeah. I have a dog and that's a lot.
Well, hey, I mean, that's a little harder to take care of than plants. So I think you're in the right direction.
Yeah. I think maybe that's the difficulty, a part of it is difficult part of it as well, is that it's just simply remembering. I think that is weirdly a lot for some people, including myself.
Like
there's nothing, my dog barks at me. If you know what I mean? Like it's a constant reminder. It's audible. It's right there. You can't miss a dog. But with plants, it's like, you can forget so easily, at least in my case.
Yeah. And you know, that's the thing. A lot of the plants that I have, I like plants that are kind of visual. So it's like they get almost sad. They start to like completely droop over and it's, you know, they're not yelling at you like a dog, but they'll definitely let you know when they're not happy with you.
Yeah. And on that too, I feel like plant owners personify their plants a lot. You know what I mean? They give it a personality. They give it kind of these traits of them. I want to know, on what level do you humanize your plants?
Oh, it's so interesting. You know, a lot of people, like, they give their plants names. And I don't go that far. My plants don't have names, at least right now. But I definitely, there's definitely a level of personification with your plants where, especially if you have them for a while, you kind of grow fond of them. And, if they start to decline, it's like, oh, man, I've had this for a while. So, it's definitely something really easy to get into. And, I think like something that's kind of interesting about the plant taking caring hobby is people's idea of just like kind of how plants respond to them. I think a lot of people in the hobby, you know, they have this idea of like, oh, I take such good care of my plants, so they like love me back. And that's like, it's like a really fun idea to think that. And I've been like reading these interesting studies on intelligence in plants, which I know sounds like this like crazy taboo topic. And while plants don't have like emotional intelligence, what's really interesting is they, they have different levels of intelligence, maybe not like you and I, but there's these studies out there. They actually did them with pea plants, and they found that they could actually condition these plants. If you're familiar with like the Pavlov studies with the dogs, the same thing they could do with it. They would shine a light down a tube and they'd match it up with a fan. And after they did this for a few days, they would take away the light stimuli and it would actually follow the fan looking for the light. And it was showing that these plants were trained, like they were trained to have intelligence. And I just thought that was so cool. So, getting back to your topic of personification, you know, maybe not in the way that, other things can be, but they definitely, I think, in a way are intelligent in their own way, which is cool.
At the very least, like react to their environment, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I've heard these same kind of studies where it's like, it was trees, but I'm not sure. Maybe I think it was like one tree at one end of the forest gets attacked by predators or something, and then like sends a signal through the root systems and tells the other trees, and they like harden their bark or whatever they can do to defend.
Yeah,
like, that's really interesting. That is intelligent. I mean, that's communication.
Yeah, I know. Right?
That's amazing.
Crazy.
Yeah. I don't think many people think that, and that is incredible to think that. For that though, for plants, you know, have you ever had it where maybe two of the same exact plants grow differently? Like they need different kind of caring?
Yeah. I think, and that's like another thing, you know, sometimes, you know, there'll be things going around and people will say, oh, such and such plant, it's so easy to care for. Like everyone should have one. And I think, you know, me, I've had multiple of the same plants over time, and they almost do have like their own personalities, their own needs that they want. And I think that's like another thing that can be kind of discouraging for people. They hear this plant's so easy or that plant's so easy, and they get it and they don't have that experience at all. But kind of going to your point, basically what I'm trying to say is they all have their own personality even within the same breed of plant.
That's interesting. Yeah. And so do you not agree then there's like beginner friendly plants and more like, you know, intermediate planters should go for that?
No, there's definitely plants that are like super beginner friendly. Like snake plants are kind of like the go-to. Everybody says like, that's the perfect plant for beginners.
Why is that? What makes it a beginner plant?
So they're, first of all, you could put them in bright light, you could put them in low light. They don't care. They're happy with anything. If you forget to water them, kind of like you were saying, they forgive you. They don't mind. You can go months without watering them. They're just really, you know, they're really forgiving plants. Whereas, you know, other things, like I always say Calatheas are kind of, they look really beautiful, but people go and pick them up. And then they're like, if you give them tap water, they die. So it's just very finicky. But I think there's kind of plants that, of course, are going to be hardier than others. But again, it always just comes back to your environment. What's going to do well for you? Obviously, here in Arizona, it's so dry. It's like the air is super crispy. So anything that needs humidity, probably not going to do well here. Whereas somewhere that is humid, that plant might grow super easily for you. So yeah, really like coming back to the biggest thing is really just thinking about your natural environment that you have.
Yeah, I had a question about Arizona specifically as well, because like, at least my inclination is that it's more difficult to grow things here just because it's so dry, you know, no moisture in the air, that kind of thing. It may be more like overexposing in sunlight. Is that true at all? Or is it actually easier because of all those factors?
You know, it's like, it's a give and a take. So somewhere like where you might be in Buffalo, especially if you have house plants, I'm from Buffalo, New York, it's like typically overcast and it's really cloudy. And somewhere like that, you know, you have great humidity, which is going to make some plants easier, but you're probably going to need to supplement your light. During the winter, a lot of your plants are going to go into dormancy. Whereas in Arizona, exactly like you said, the sun's so bright. I've had so many situations where I thought I'll bring my plants outside just for a couple hours and they get hit with that bright direct light and they're just like completely dead. So some people just think because it's sunnier, it's brighter here, it's going to be easier. But I think every place is kind of, it's got its own challenges and different things to navigate.
I see. So you just use whatever location you're in, any, you know, setting that is, to its weaknesses and its strengths, and kind of substitute for both.
Yeah.
I get that. Okay. And then, well, on that same vein too, like, so with Arizona, you know, and that kind of thing, and you just took them out for a couple hours, they die, that kind of thing happens. What happens if you have to like leave, like travel?
That's a great question. So actually when you had messaged me, I was just heading out of town and I had to be out of town a little longer than I expected. You know, perfect, best case scenario, you have somebody, they come over, they help you water your plants. In a situation like me, not too many people are like too thrilled to come over and water the 150 plants that I had. So, you know, if you're going out of town for like a week, even 2 weeks, really, you can push it out. I mean, a lot of people get worried about that, but most plants will be okay with that. If you need to go out longer, there's all kinds of things you can do with like self-watering. You can kind of set up basins of water and you can use like strings and it'll kind of actually suck the water up through.
I see. Yeah.
Catch the moisture. Reaction.
Wow. That's interesting.
Yeah. So, you know, you have to be a little crafty, but there's definitely ways you can get around it if you have to go out of town for a while.
Wow. And so with that kind of self-watering system, is there any kind of, let's say, bias towards that? I'm like, that's not how you should do it because it's so easy. Is there any of that kind of attitude in the plant world?
You know, the plant world is interesting because I think a lot of people, they get into their certain pattern of caring for their plants. And for those people, it's like, that's the only way to do it. And, you know, that's like everything. But I think there's multiple ways to do everything correctly. A lot of people, it's called bottom watering is kind of like the official term for it, where you'll get a big bowl of water and you'll set your plant at the bottom and it sucks up the water from underneath, as opposed to top watering where you just have like a watering can and pour it on top. neither one's right, neither one's wrong. It's really just like a preference thing. So, yeah, either of them can work.
Okay, gotcha. It is cool that there's all these different strategies. I remember I like toured a farm one time and they had these kind of like vertical farm integrations, oh, that kind, yeah, of thing. Is there anything like that for houseplants as well, where it's like a system where it just waters everything for you?
Yeah, some people, they do these crazy builds. You can, I mean, I'm sure there's like systems you can buy where people go to Home Depot and like get these PVC pipes and drill holes into them and mount them on the wall and kind of create their own like semi-hydroponic system where you kind of just set the pot into the PVC pipes and water runs through them and you don't ever have to worry about watering your plants then. So that's kind of like the foolproof way. If you want to make sure your plants never die, you can go with something like that and then you don't have to worry about watering ever.
I see. Is there any like transferable skill to this, to raising plants? Like, do you notice this anywhere else in life where it is not directly related to plants? However, you've like found the skill or have this kind of perspective that is based out of this?
You know, I think the biggest thing with being into plants that it's kind of taught me is being patient and not giving up on things. There's so many times where I'll have a plant and it looks like it's dead and I think I'm just going to throw it out. And I either for being lazy or just leaving it on my windowsill or actually deciding I'm going to revive it, you know, you let it sit there and literally from nothing, the plant will come back up and sprout out. And I think that's like, it's a good lesson in life of, you know, if there's things that you want to give up on and you think there's no hope for it, it's not going to come back. It's like a good day-to-day life reminder that not to give up on things too early. So yeah.
That's beautiful. Yeah. That's a really nice life message, yeah, like, due to this. And speaking of that, like, is that kind of your kind of mantra to people on like why they should get into it? Like speaking of someone who has no, I mean, not, there's no offense to this, but I have no like interest in like growing plants, but is there some kind of reason like you're like what you're saying that there are these kind of transferable things to life that they should be into it?
Yeah. You know, for me, I mean, again, obviously I love plants, but I don't think that they're for everyone. You know, it's something where I would never push plants on somebody who didn't want it and say, you have to have them.
Just give it to them as a gift.
Yeah.
Like, oh, what are you going to do?
Yeah. Coincidentally, now you have one. Yeah, I think it can be a really great hobby, and I think it can be something, again, you know, it can be really zen, it can be relaxing, it can kind of give you something in life to take care of, and for some people that's comforting, and for other people it's not. So I don't think, you know, necessarily it's again, something for everyone, but if it is something that interests people, and again, a lot of people are kind of scared, or they're intimidated, or they don't know where to start, I would say starting out with one plant and just kind of going from there.
Wow. Yeah. There's so many things you said in there that I actually want to ask about. First off, actually just like a couple sentences ago, you said something about reviving. So like plants that, you know, seemingly are dead, but you don't give up on them. Does that happen a lot?
Oh yeah. I always say, you know, there's so many people who make plant content on the internet, and some of them, you know, will act as though they've never killed a plant. Mm. I'm not so sure about that. I think if you have a collection, it's just natural. Plants in nature die, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's another thing where people who are new to the hobby, if you kill a plant, there's nothing to feel bad about. It's completely normal. But yeah, reviving a plant, it's honestly part of the whole hobby, really, is you know, managing pests on your plant and managing root rot and how to revive plants back to health after something bad has happened to them. So you know, if you get deeper and deeper into the hobby, you'll certainly come across it at some point of not just simply watering your plant, but kind of going through the whole process of reviving one back if you want to bring it back to life.
My gosh. And so would you identify or would you recommend to a beginner as well to kind of learn all these systems prior to getting into it, or just like when it happens, great, Google it and start learning from there?
You know, personally for me, I'm somebody, I learn from doing things. I can read all day and that's great. I think some people that's how they learn. But for me, I love to learn from doing things. And I think like throughout anything I do in my life, I'm really comfortable with failing. And I think that's something that is good to be comfortable with and understanding that like not everything's going to be perfect in life. So for me, that's my favorite way to learn. And I would encourage people, if they're getting into plants for the first time, don't be afraid to fail. Don't be afraid to kill plants. But I mean, that's just my take on it.
Yeah. And also as an alternative option too, like you were saying something, you know, the Zen part of it. And it's like, you know, again, all these kind of transferable skills to life. and kind of perspective behind it. I love that. I mean, I don't know anyone that is really into houseplants that is extremely stressful as a person. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like usually, at least I've yet to meet that person who has, 150 plants in their house and then they're very stressed and very like agitated all the time. Like those two don't usually come across.
Yeah. I think it's definitely something, you definitely need to have a degree of patience with it because plants, first of all, they grow very slow and contrary to what anybody believes. So, I think it definitely tests your patience growing plants. It, it opens your mind to, failure not being a bad thing. And I think it definitely just makes you slow down a little, which is a good thing sometimes.
That's awesome. And yeah, speaking of speed too, is there certain plants that you like better there's a visual growth to it. Like every day there's almost something visual. And you're like, wow, like that's actually like insane growth. For instance, like I have a roommate that grew oyster mushrooms.
Oh yeah.
Mushrooms grow fast.
Yeah.
I mean, they're like visually fast. Like you'd wake up the next morning and this thing was like almost doubled in size.
Yeah.
Like, it's wild.
That's another thing, honestly, I say for beginners is I think something really good to get is getting yourself a plant that is a faster grower. Cause I think it's having that, not instant gratification, but a little more gratification along the way. And as your plant is putting out leaves, it's usually a sign for you that you're doing something right. So I say when people get plants, it's usually a good thing to look for, something that's a little bit faster growing. When you have 150 plants, typically if I walk around my house every day, at least one plant's doing something. So it makes it a little easier. But when I was newer to the hobby, I definitely was a little more fond of the plants that were faster growing or would put out flowers or things like that.
That's amazing. Do you have any recommendations for beginners on like what those plants could be, like any specific examples?
Yeah, so I know I mentioned the snake plant. It kind of contradicts what I just said about fast growing because they're actually incredibly slow growing plants. But if you want something, again, that's just bulletproof, the snake plant's great. ZZ plants, again, really bulletproof. They're kind of medium in terms of speed, but they come in cool varieties. There's one called the Raven ZZ, and it's got these like glossy black leaves and just really beautiful foliage on it. And then the pothos, I always say, is again a really great beginner plant, and that's going to be the plant for you that grows like wildfire, especially if you hang it in a window like you have over there. Mm-hmm. It's going to go crazy. So yeah, that's a really great plant for beginners.
Awesome. Are these like common as well? Like you can get these at pretty much any Home Depot, that kind of thing?
That's the other great thing, is you can get these plants anywhere and they're super cheap. Another thing I've noticed, people, as they start to get in the hobby, again, there's those really expensive plants on the market. And if you go down the Instagram rabbit hole and start to look into it, it might seem like, well, that's the plant that I should get. And I would never recommend a beginner getting an expensive plant. Typically, they're like imported from somewhere super exotic. They're very difficult to take care of. So, I'd say typically those more common plants are really good ones for beginners.
And with that, so like, I understand like export, like importing and exporting, that kind of thing can make a plant expensive. What is the benefit of like buying a really expensive plant, taking care of it? Like, is it truly that much more beautiful of spending, let's say, like $1,000 for a plant?
So I guess it depends on the person you ask. I personally can't justify spending $1,000 on a plant. I just, I can't do it. But for some people, people might think that I'm an extreme collector, but for somebody who's like a really serious collector, it's kind of like the thrill of the hunt and the thrill of filling out your collection. Some people specialize in very specific varieties of plants where they want to collect one of everything. So for those people, I understand why the desire is there. I mean, there certainly are plants out on the market that are really gorgeous. And for some people, different plants, maybe if they're from different parts of the world, bringing a plant from that area back to where they're living can be really sentimental for them, or it can kind of evoke memories. So, everybody kind of has different reasons for what plants they like to collect. But for the people who are into the really rare plants, there's a whole slew of reasons that it could be.
That kind of price, yeah. Can I ask, what's the most expensive plant that you've bought? Or maybe plant associative, so like, any kind of system with it?
Yeah, I'd say the most expensive plant I bought, probably maybe like $100.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was expecting worse.
Yeah,
no, that's not terrible.
Yeah, no, it's not terrible. I and really my whole channel is based around more common plants. I think a lot of people making content, especially again, like on YouTube and Instagram, they focus really on that rare plant space. And I think that that's great. And it's great to have information about those plants out there and for people to have access to seeing those plants. Cause so many of these plants, you would probably never see them in your life if it wasn't for these people showing them off. Yeah. But I like to focus more so on that beginner side of things. And again, for me, it's while I don't think that like everyone has to get implants or everyone has to have plants, it's really fun to introduce people to the hobby and get them more comfortable with something that maybe they wouldn't have been, or kind of give them that confidence to just get into the hobby a little more.
I love that. Yeah. You're speaking a little bit of, you know, similar to that a little bit ago on like kind of, you know, putting plants like where they were at one point in life, that kind of thing. Do you base plants with memories as well? Is that something you do?
Yeah.
Like this specific plant brings you back to like, you know, 10 years old in Buffalo, that kind of thing.
Yeah. So, sadly, none of the plants I have in my collection are that old ever since I moved. All my plants are new since I've come to Arizona, but, definitely like if I hit like a certain milestone in life, that's kind of where I like to go splurge and buy a little more of an expensive plant that I know I'm going to have for a while. And it kind of is like a special memory around that plant. So, yeah, I think for a lot of people, it can be a really great, keepsake for a special memory, or, a lot of people, you know, they get plants passed down through their family through, you know, they have their grandmother's plant that is 100 years old. So I think things like that can be really special and really cool.
That's amazing. Do you plan to do that?
Yeah, definitely.
Generational plant.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
That's amazing. Yeah. I always thought of having a generational tortoise, like just buying one, cause they lived to like, you know, 100 plus.
So
it's
long.
Like just throw it down. Yeah. It's
yeah,
so funny.
Even if they don't want it,
exactly,
you're getting it anyway.
I hope they don't want it. Like, I hope it's a burden. Yeah. Like, cause that's so much more funny to me. Cause it's like giving someone a goldfish. You're like, well, now you got to take care of it. Like, oops.
Yeah, I think a tortoise is a little more extreme than that. But,
much more extreme. You need you need an environment for it, food, all that. Yeah, it's ridiculous. Yeah. But so with that, with gifts too, like, do people only give you plant gifts at this point?
It's so funny you say that. Yeah, because it's like 50-50. I have some people will be like, oh, I know you love plants. So they give me plants. And then other people on the other side are like, well, I don't know anything about it, so I don't want to get you something and you might not like it. I'll say I appreciate any plant that I get. I don't discriminate against any plants, but
For those people that are watching that are giving you specific plants, give them like, what do you need right now? Like, what do you need as a
what
gift?
Do I need is actually like some soil. So if anybody's soiling around, just hit me up. But
oh my god. Okay, so I have a lot of questions when it comes to soil as well. That again, something that I want to get in the weeds of, like, okay, what is like good soil? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, when you're getting into this, again, it's infinite world, and soil is just one of those umbrellas where you just get lost in.
Yeah.
So what do you look for when it comes to soil when you're buying things for houseplants, that kind of thing? What should people look for?
Yeah. So again, it's if you're a beginner out there, people say, you know, you're getting your new plant, and a lot of people out there will be like, well, you need this mix of soil, you need that mix of soil. I'll tell most of those people out there, there's nothing wrong with keeping your plant in the soil that you got it from at the store. It's perfectly okay. And if it was growing in that plant, in that soil in the greenhouse, it's probably okay for your plant. Once you start getting into those a little more exotic plants, a little more picky plants, that's when you want to start kind of thinking about your soil a little more carefully. And over time, as you kind of understand the plant that you have more, that's when you'll start to understand, you know, how much drainage does this plant need? And if it is something like a cacti or a succulent, you'll want to put more drainage into that soil so that the water runs through it freer. Whereas if it's something that's, you know, more of like a boggy plant and it's used to being in like a really moist soil, something with a little more peat moss in it will help retain that moisture and just kind of mimic its environment a little better. And again, you know, I talked a lot about finding the right environment for the plant inside your house, but also thinking about where the plant grows in nature and how it grows in nature is such an important thing to make sure that you keep that plant happy. So, yeah.
Wow. That's awesome. So what I heard is that for good soil, let's say like soil that's, you know, more intentioned for this plant is like moisture consumption in a sense, like, or maybe even nutrients as well within the soil, that kind of thing. Gotcha. And so with those, I didn't know, I had no idea that like different plants need like very specific, maybe types of soil, depending on what it is. That's really interesting. But you're saying mostly that if you go to the store, it's in soil, you get it. There's really no need to change it if you don't want to.
Yeah. You know, like I said, you can always go down a rabbit hole of like, this is the perfect soil. This is what you can add. And if you want to do that, certainly great. Your plant will probably enjoy it. But there's also nothing wrong with keeping it in the soil that it comes in the pot. And that's another thing. You know, a lot of people, they bring a plant home and they think right away, well, I've got to repot it. I've got to get it out of this pot. It's actually much better to keep it in that pot right when you bring it home from the store. It's, you know, acclimating to your house. It's acclimating to this brand new environment and pulling it out of its pot right away. It's just one more thing that it has to acclimate to, one more thing stressing out the plant. So I typically tell people actually keep it in that pot for, you know, at least a couple weeks, if not longer, to let it just acclimate to your house first.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah, I didn't even think about that. It's so funny. Again, it's kind of that personification of plants. You're like, yeah, it's like coming to a new home.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's got to get comfortable.
Yeah.
It's like, you don't need to change its clothes. Like, yeah. It's just like letting it get comfortable first.
Yeah, just let it chill. Yeah, yeah.
That's so funny. Gotcha. And so, okay, with 150 plants in this house, that kind of thing, I'm guessing some have different watering schedules. Is that fair to say? Some need watering more than others, some less. Is that fair?
Definitely. And again, you know, for me, I think an important part of having plants, especially when you start to have a lot of plants, and to keep it in a place where you enjoy taking care of them is making your collection fit your lifestyle. So for me, you know, I have a lot going on in my day-to-day life. I cannot be having plants in different watering schedules every day. So I have one day of the week where I water my plants. Some plants get watered every single week. Some plants skip a couple weeks, depending on their watering needs. And I like to keep it simple. There's people who will definitely kind of tailor their watering schedules a little more. But for me, that's just what works for me. My plants respond well to that. And again, that's another thing is just, you know, as you're bringing plants into your home, thinking about what's realistic for your lifestyle. And if it's not realistic for you to have plants that need to be watered every couple days and that's it's too much for you, then, you know, just find a plant that maybe is a little more suited for your lifestyle.
That makes sense. Yeah. And so is there any, it seems like it's once a week, maybe once, twice a week, maybe once every other week. Is there any plants that you own that's every day you have to?
Oh, definitely not. And honestly, that's like the biggest reason so many people kill their plants is they actually overwater them. We call it overloving your plants. But you know, root rot is it's typically the biggest cause. And if the plant's sitting in water, it just gets like stagnant, bacteria grows in it, and it gets into the root system and it actually kills the plants. So if you're listening to this video and you are watering your plants every day, they probably don't need that much love.
It's good to know, because I again, like, I mean, like, as a layman going into this world, like, that's what I assume is like,
yeah.
I mean, again, like, a stupid example, like, stupid comparison, but it's like, I feed my dog every day.
Yeah.
It's like, you gotta
yeah.
feed your plants
no,
every day.
No, that's what a lot of people think too. And it feels natural and it feels like you're doing a good thing. And, you know, when the plants get root rot, they'll kind of start to droop over and look very sad. And then people think like, oh, I need to water it more. And it just makes the situation worse. So yeah, it's it can definitely be a little confusing at first when you get into it.
I see that. Okay. And so what's, do you have something that comes to mind that's the most difficult thing you've grown?
Oh, man.
Maybe something that just like did not obey, that kind of thing. You know what I mean?
You know, actually, if you're into plants, you'll know what I'm talking about. It's called a pink princess. It's a philodendron. It's a very trendy plant on Instagram, and it grows these like beautiful pink leaves. They're completely pink, and they die off because they don't have any chlorophyll in it, so they can't absorb light. But I, you know, for the longest time, I was like, I don't want one, and I kind of FOMO'd into it because I see everybody's plants and they're so beautiful. So I got one. It was the most difficult plant I've ever taken care of. It recently just died, so it wasn't for me, but it's, you know, again, it happens, and I think it's for me, it was fun to have it and experiment with it and just see how it went.
Wow, yeah, this is going to be a weird tangential comparison.
Okay.
However, so like for me, again, like I'm very new to this plant world, still getting into it, but for me, it's like books. So like if I go to a bookstore, like I always get a book. And there are times where it's just like, man, that thing just looks like a great book.
Yeah.
I'll be that guy and I'll buy it and so forth. So I do wonder, like, if you go to Lowe's or Home Depot or that kind of thing with a plant section, is that kind of your bookstore? Like, do you always get something there?
Yes. Okay. Almost always. Almost always, yes. It's the good thing is the deeper you are into plants, the easier it is when you go to the store, you look around and you know what everything is, you know what its care requirements are going to be, and you know those plants that are going to be trouble, but sometimes they're just so good looking that you grab them anyway. So you know, can't help it sometimes, but
do you ever get upset growing plants? Is there ever any, I know we talk about it being zen and stress-free and so forth, but do you ever get upset?
No, it can, there's definitely moments where, I'd say it can get overwhelming, I guess, when you have collections of certain sizes. And I think a lot of people talk about that too, is, you know, kind of some people might feel burnout after a while of taking care of so many plants. And, it's definitely a real thing. I think like anything, you know, you have ebbs and flows of how interested you are in a certain hobby that you're working on. And the difference with plants as opposed to any other hobby is any other hobby, you could, you know, set it down for 6 months and pick it back up. Yeah. Your plants, if you don't take care of them for 6 months, they're going to be dead when you come back. So it's just a little different in that sense. But yeah, I think it's really natural for people to kind of have ebbs and flows in their interest in their plants.
Yeah. I mean, speaking of ebbs and flows, can you describe maybe like the learning curve to raising houseplants?
Yeah.
Does it start easy and get more complex, or does it actually start out incredibly complex and maybe get easier over time?
You know, I think it starts out and it grows into being as complex as you want it to be. Mm-hmm. I think for everyone, it's definitely a little bit of a learning curve to get into, but I wouldn't say it's anything extraordinary. I'd say within watching, you know, a few hours of YouTube videos, anybody could become a master in taking care of a couple plants. And I think that's what's really nice about it is it's not a super high barrier to entry hobby to get into. And it's not a super expensive hobby to get into either. Obviously, you know, if you start to enjoy it, you grow your collection to be in like the hundreds of plants, it can definitely kind of scale in complexity with that, you know, naturally by having more plants in your collection. It's just more work in terms of watering, but also in terms of like pest management is a big thing. So your plants might get pests on them, and then they're in close proximity, they like easily spread to each other, and you have to treat all of them. So yeah, like I said, you can kind of make it as easy or as complicated as you want it to be.
I'm sure those complex ones that make it just all the more fun, right?
Yes,
I'm sure there comes a point where it's like you're just coasting. At that point, it's like, is this even a hobby, or is this just like a lifestyle that you've like, okay, I just have plants now, versus like striving for something?
That's the thing about it. I think it's, if you're somebody who likes a challenge in life, that's the fun thing about plants is there's always another plant that you could get to kind of push your skill level and push your growing level. Maybe, you know, you just start out and you have foliage plants and you keep them alive, and that's great. Maybe the next year later into it, you decide, I really want to get my plants to go into bloom, and getting your plants to bloom inside your house, that's like a whole other skill. So, there's always just like another level of plant care that you can kind of take it next steps up to kind of increase your skill level.
I love that. Yeah. Yeah. And you were talking a little bit ago about like barrier to entry. Can we talk about that? Like on a financial level, like how much money would it take to like get into this and, you know, get a good flow of getting this hobby going?
Yeah. So I love to say to people, the barrier to entry can literally be $0. Like anywhere, you know, you can go outside, you could go into your backyard and you could probably find a plant somewhere that was interesting to you. And you could put it in a pot and start taking care of it, and you could get into the hobby that way. But even, you know, going to the store for a basic setup, I mean, if you're talking a basic couple plants, a couple pots, maybe you get soil off the bat, maybe you don't. Maybe you get a fertilizer, maybe you don't. I mean, like $50, like high end. So you're not talking anything crazy.
Yeah, that's not crazy at all. Yeah. As someone who loves expensive hobbies, that's a dream. You know?
Yeah. I know. Same. And you know, unfortunately, it can get very expensive. Yeah. But it can also be a very cheap hobby too, which is great.
Wow. And is there any? I was wondering about this. Maybe it's a dumb thought, but is there any like economy to plants? As in like, is there any people out there that, you know, taking plants, grow them to like, a suitable phase in its life, and then like sell that plant for more? Is that a thing?
Yeah. Oh yeah. That's a huge thing in the plant world. And the thing about plants that's unlike any other product that you would sell on the internet is you literally grow, like money grows on trees, right? You can have your plant and people will do what are called top cutting. So you let your plant grow, you let it get bigger, and then you just chop it off at the top. You can root it up in either soil or water or whatever you want. And now you have two plants and you can keep one for yourself and you can sell the other one off. And it's just an endless cycle. It's a huge thing in the plant community is selling plants.
I had no idea. Do you do that?
that was another thing I got into in COVID. I was buying a ton of plants online at the time, and I was like, well, if other people can do this, I was like, why can't I do that? So I started doing it out of my apartment at the time. I was living in an apartment in Scottsdale, and I rented out actually a garage in my apartment complex, and I had like a growing operation in there. And plant sales were so crazy at the time of COVID, so it really scaled up. And now I work with a greenhouse. There's a location in California and a location in Florida that we ship out of. So,
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Come on. Can I ask what like people are like paying for such a plant? Like what makes it very, you know, unattainable to them that they don't want to grow it, that they'll pay for it? Like where does that come in?
Yeah. So again, for different people, it's all on different levels. at those more basic plants, which again is where I focus on, sometimes it's just an availability thing. You know, sometimes there's a very specific plant that people want and it's just not available in their area. Living in a bigger city like Phoenix, obviously, we're lucky to have a lot of different variety here. But, you know, for people living in smaller places, sometimes the plants that they want, they're just not accessible. And kind of getting into that rarer side of things, I mean, that's taken to a whole nother level, you know. Some plants that might be for sale on the market, maybe there's only like a couple of them in the entire country on sale. So it's definitely can get very, very crazy in terms of the people who are selling those plants.
Yeah, that's amazing. Do you have a video on that by chance?
I just started doing content on, I called it like, I think like 10 plant hustles that people can do. Oh, so wow. Starting selling plants out of your home was part of it. YouTube channels, all kinds of stuff. And again, that was just kind of like another thing that I started being interested in is for me, it's been such a great hobby and there's been so many things I've gotten to learn in doing it that I think, you know, kind of as we start to see the economy pull back, I was less interested in like, how can I make money off of this and turning it more to how can other people make money off of that? So, yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so cool because, again, you're speaking of, like, you know, very low barrier to entry financially and, again, low barrier to entry to, like, information. You can find everything on YouTube or Google, I'm pretty sure, on, like, anything you need to learn.
Yeah.
And you can, if you want to, turn it into, like, a side hustle and, like, make money off of it. I mean, that's really cool. There's not many activities like that.
Yeah, no, it's great. And I think, you know, I always say, like, it's such a great time to be alive where you can learn how to do anything right from the comfort of your home, right from watching a YouTube video. So, no, it's awesome.
That's amazing. Yeah, I do want to talk about YouTube as well. So getting into content, again, you said it was like 2.5 years ago at this point. Like, can you talk about kind of your journey with that? Did it start out very awkward, as I think a lot of people run into very quickly when it comes to like making content? And how are you feeling about it now?
Yeah. So funny story. I started doing YouTube probably when I was like, maybe 10 years old. Oh, wow. I was young the first time I ever started doing a YouTube channel. It was like super goofy things, but I always had channels throughout the years and I would always, you know, grow them to a small audience and I would just stop. And this was the first channel that I ever like grew and I actually stuck with for a while and I'm obviously still doing it. But it for me, like being on video or like doing YouTube, it was never uncomfortable for me. And it honestly, it makes me sad when people are like, oh, I'm nervous to get on camera, but I want to do it. I know that's a big struggle for a lot of people. So for me, that was never really the problem. I think my problem is I say like I have shiny object syndrome. I always like want to jump to the next thing. And I think for me, kind of forcing myself to stick with something for a long time has honestly been one of my biggest struggles in doing YouTube. So maybe a little bit of a different journey than most people have. But that's, I guess, kind of my unique struggle in YouTube thus far.
Yeah, and I got to say, your community is really cool. Like, I've seen the comment section and everything. It's, like, very supportive. And I can imagine that's actually probably true for just, like, the plant world in general. I mean, very rarely I can imagine there's toxicity. You know what I mean? Like
you know, you'd be surprised. There's a lot of it's, like, plant tea channels where they love to, like, stir up drama, which it's its own whole world, which is fun, too. But, I'm very fortunate on my channel. The people in my comment section are just like the nicest people ever. They're so chill. And I think for me, like I've grown my channel really slowly, which I think has kind of been a blessing because I know everyone in my comment section and they're great. And I, you know, it's just been it's been a good journey. So yeah.
There's something really nice about that too. I think, a lot of people have that misconception about like, you know, getting into like YouTube and making content. It's like, it's to grow really quickly, really fast and get in a large audience. And I just don't think that's like the best way to do it. Like, I think it should be a slow growth. I think it should be something cultivated and matures over time. I don't think you want something like as if it's like a new product hitting the market and then everyone wants it all of a sudden. Like, I think that's actually kind of dangerous.
Yeah, I think, and you know, again, like the world we live in is like so fast paced, like instant gratification, hustle culture, like, come on, like, we've got to get to 10,000 subscribers by the end of this month. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with that either. Like, I think it's great to have goals and push yourself. But for me, I've always looked at YouTube as like more of a hobby. Like, yes, there's money to be made in it. I think that that's great. And I think that there's a lot of potential there with it. But for me, I don't ever really see myself being the type of person who's like, has a set posting schedule and is like super concerned about the analytics. I think for me, it would like suck the fun out of it. And I think if you're not enjoying the content that you make, I think it's, I don't know. I just, I think it's important to enjoy what you're doing.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I was in that rut as well, where it's like, okay, I need to post this exact day every single week, or else that is a failed week. You know what I mean? And I'd be really down on myself, but I think I've turned a corner within the last, like, let's say 3 to 4 months, where it's like, I don't think that's necessary. Like, having a posting schedule is like good, you know, it's like a good thing to have, but it's not like a requirement by any means. You don't need to do that. If anything, I think it's really nice when you take your time and like do the things that you want to do, because that means when you post that video or when you post that thing that you are finally, like when you upload it, you know that it's truly you. You're like, I really wanted to do this. It's not just because like I had to do something by Monday. Like it wasn't like that. Like I did it because I wanted to, and here's that product. And that probably shines through to the audience as well. It's like, oh, look at this, like a project they care about.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, there. I know for me, and I'm sure maybe you can relate too, like there's been videos in the past that I've made, and you know, I was like in a bad mood and I was cranky and I was like, I've just got to get this video out. And I posted it, and I'd look back and I was like, oh, that's like it comes through in the video, I think.
Oh, definitely. So. Yeah, I was just talking to about this with a friend who does murals. She was actually on the podcast as well, but we're talking about like our. It seems like the work that I like the least, weirdly, is my most popular.
Isn't that interesting how that works?
Why is that?
I know. I always wonder that. Yeah,
it's so strange. And the stuff that I like the most is the least popular. Yeah. Like, there's a weird like.
Yeah. No, I don't know what that is, but
it's so strange. Yeah. My theory that I came up with was that I think when it comes to like artistry, just in general, because like making content, I would at the very least call it art, right? Yeah. You're making this project that has never existed before. When you, let's say, over edit it, as in like too much love to a plant, you know what I mean? Like give it too much. And I think when you hit it at different parts in your life, let's say you edit it over the course of like a month, that's a lot of different yous that are touching this, right?
Yeah.
Like me in the morning and me at night are already two separate people. And so if we're doing like 50 different editing sessions or 50 different filming or whatever it is, like that is a lot of different people touching this versus something that I did in an afternoon. That's like just the one me doing it. I think it's easier to grasp as an audience member to be like, oh, that's the message right there. And so it's easier to grasp versus something that is like touching it many, many, many times.
That's so interesting. I never thought of it that way, but I mean, that's a really valid point that you made is, it's like different versions of you working through the same project.
Yeah. Well, and maybe that's wrong. I mean, that's just what I came up in the moment.
It sounded good.
I was like, that sounds right. Yeah. It's easier. Cause I just have heard like musicians as well, like bands say the same thing. It's like their most famous song is something they literally whipped up in like 2 hours. And it's like something that's made them millions. And it's like, that's crazy.
I know.
And they may not even like it that much, but like it's their most popular. But I do think it's because it's like a simple message, as in like a singular, easy to grasp message that it's like, yep, that's what the art is. And everyone's like, yeah, that. I see what you're doing.
I know. It's like the 80-20 rule. So
yeah, exactly that. Yeah. And so, again, going back to, you know, YouTube channels and so forth, is there any as well, I have my own answer to this, but like transferable skills you've learned since starting YouTube? Is it something that you really wanted to like focus in on, like get better at like, you know, whatever, editing and that kind of thing and filming and lighting and all the numerous things as infinite as the plant world is to YouTube?
Yeah. So again, I kind of come from like a little bit of a helpful background. I was into photography for a long time. So I was already into DSLRs and that kind of just obviously segmented well into doing YouTube. That's something I've been trying to get myself to push myself more into now. When I moved out here, I was less into photography, and I find a lot of my videos that I film, I'm so in this habit of just like sitting down in my office and filming it. And something I want to start pushing myself more is getting like more artistic or like more B-roll shots and just making, you know, as cinematic as a plant video can be, but a little more cinematic is something I want to kind of lean more into in my videos going forward. But YouTube in general, I think there's so many great skills that transfer over just, you know, in terms of metrics, in terms of just consistently putting something out into the world and kind of like having that battle between like perfection and getting something done, I think is something you have to get constantly used to with doing YouTube. And it's just like, I could say endless things about it, but I'm curious from your side, like what has kind of been your experience with doing YouTube and what has that taught you in that process?
Yeah. So, I mean, I come back from a little different. I guess I was into photography a little bit, but nowhere like near that I would call it like a passion. Like I was just in it when I was in high school and so forth. But For YouTube, yeah, I started it almost a year ago today. Actually, it was like a year and like 2 weeks from today was when I posted my first video.
Okay.
And so I've seen like some growth since then, but it's been a weird journey, let me tell you. Like it's been through many iterations of like what the channel is and what it's about and so forth. But when it comes to the skill of, again, I think you said that perfectly. You said like the battle between trying to get something out and perfection. I think that is said perfectly. Like that's what it is. It's like, it's, you know, it's, I'd say akin to like painting or something like that. It's like, is it ever done? No, but you do have to get it out. Like it's, you have to hit publish eventually. And so my kind of transferable skills is actually that of kind of creativity is one, right? Because YouTube, depending what kind of channel you are, goes into many different subsects of personality. So like researching, right? Writing, right? Editing, framing, right? All of this, like it's so much. And putting together sound and audio or sound and visuals, right? And putting that all together and then making it engaging at the end of the day. Like, why are they even watching this? Like, what's the point? Is there one? Or is it just entertainment? Like all of this together actually creates like a beautifully kind of sculpted project that I don't think can be done in many other hobbies. Like this is something that you're making from nothing, like absolutely nothing. Like no one's telling you have to make a video. Like you can just do that if you want, but like, what is it? Is there a point? That kind of thing. I think it's like taking on the endeavor of a book just in a very small scale and multiples of it. And so you kind of have to do that and, you know, what's the narrative and so forth. So it kind of does all of that. Storytelling, framing, editing, researching, all of that comes together in this perfect one, whatever, 10-minute video.
Yeah.
And that's really cool.
No, I love what you said about like taking nothing and turning it into something. That's something that like, that's always interested me. And like I said at the beginning, I recently got into 3D printing and that's been like another fun thing is like going from like idea to physically holding a product. But that idea of just like starting with nothing and at the end you have this like incredible thing or, you know,
this immortalized project in a sense like that will live forever. It's like you made this thing and like, that's not going anywhere.
I know. I think that's like the crazy thing. I mean, obviously YouTube has only been around for a very small amount of time in the grand scheme of things. So, I always wonder like in 100 years from now, like, is YouTube still going to be a thing? Is somebody going to be watching like a video on Calathea care?
I mean, I don't know about you, but like my friends, you know, they see what I'm doing and they see like what works and what doesn't, that kind of thing. And then they often come to me. It's like, oh, I kind of want to start like a YouTube channel or start my creative endeavor. I always just say, do it. I'm like, just go for it. Like literally just do it. There's zero barrier to entry. None. Like, you know what I mean? You have a phone in your pocket. Like that is enough. Yes. Like you're good there.
Yeah.
And just go for it. Cause like, again, at the worst case, no one watches and then, okay, what happened? Nothing. Right. Or best case, like you get a community. Right. And like, maybe eventually you can not have a job and like do this. Like, that's amazing. Like, why would you not try that at the very least? Like, if you're passionate about something, if you're expert in something, like, just do that. It makes so much sense.
I know. That's, I totally agree. And I have so many people in my personal life, too, who are like, oh, I've always wanted to, but I don't know. Or I've always wanted to, but a lot of people, you know, they'll say, well, I don't have a professional camera. I'm like, you have a phone in your hand.
You do.
They're like, that's all you need. You know, I think back, again, I did my first YouTube video as I was, I don't know exactly how old, but I was super young. And I don't know if you remember the flip cam. I don't know
how
old you are. Oh, okay, great. I'm so glad. Yeah, it was like 2 megapixel videos you'd watch it. You're like, what am I even watching? But it was like cutting edge back then.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I think now, like if I had just had my cell phone back then, I would have been like the person with the best video on YouTube. So it's crazy that people are like, well, I don't have a good enough camera, so I can't. Yeah. But
it's like, dude, there's YouTubers right now with millions of subscribers that use only their phone. Like, that's happening currently.
Yeah.
Like, it's like you have that camera, what they're using. So that's clearly not a barrier. Like, that's just an excuse. Like we can all agree.
Yeah.
But it's that. What do you think that is to, I'm not sure, the anxiety of not wanting to start, maybe it's the fear of failing.
Yeah.
But again, I don't know what failing means in their mind, that kind of thing. Like, I don't know what it is. Why don't people start that endeavor?
I don't know. I think I can understand YouTube. Like I always say I'm an introvert. So like for me, I can totally relate to people like being nervous to put themselves out there, being nervous to do things. To me, I was like, being on camera doesn't like make me nervous, but like talking to people makes me nervous. So like I understand that fear and I can like rationalize that, but kind of to your point, like you said, like what's the worst thing that could happen? Like you post a video and nobody sees it, or you post a video and like some internet troll sitting in their mom's basement comments on it, like, oh well. Yeah. So
exactly that. Maybe that is it. Maybe it is a fear of like not just nothing but negative enforcement. And even then it's like, well, dude, like how is that even possible? Like, what's going to happen? Like, it's going to get a million views and everyone hates it? Like, that's not going to happen. At worst, it's like three people will be like, this is trash or whatever, and that'll be the end of it. And you just move on. And then you probably agree because you're like, was that my best work? No.
I know. For you, now it's like your 1 year anniversary. Congratulations. Yeah, if you, do you ever like go back and watch your very first videos and what do you think of them?
So there was a brief moment where I started a different channel just to see like just a little bit more artsy videos, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
It was getting into like just stuff I was passionate about that like didn't fit the narrative, I guess, on my main channel. That I disagree with completely at this point. But anyway, so I was like, oh, and then I made them and I was like, I worked really hard on them. Like I put incredible B-roll, great framing, really cinematic footage. Like it was really well done at the time.
Yeah.
And then I was like, man, maybe I should post those on my main channel because now they fit the narrative perfectly.
Okay,
it's all about like self-betterment in specific ways and things to get into. And I rewatched them like ready to be like, oh, I can't wait to watch this again. Yeah. And I saw it and I was like, this is the worst video I've ever made. Like, it's so bad. And so, yeah, it happens all the time. And I think that maybe just be the beginning inflection point of the learning curve, as we're saying with all this, is that like, that's a good thing in my opinion. You should look back on your past work and be like, that's bad. I think that's a good thing in my opinion. Like, it means you're growing.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. That's, I think it's great to look back at where you were and be like, oh wow, I can't believe that. And it's almost kind of fun. It was not a different channel, but I recently started doing shorts and I thought like, oh yeah, I'll go back and like clip up some of my old videos. And I started watching them. I was like, ooh, this is not it.
Maybe not. Yeah, I agree. And so, yeah, I didn't post those videos, by the way. I just didn't do it. I was like, no, it's not worth it. It's not worth it. But yeah, recently I got into that more kind of cinematic, more things that I'm doing. I did like a journaling challenge video. I have one coming out that I'm not going to say yet, but a really interesting challenge video that I'm working on of like, again, all of this is kind of arranged around like just self-improvement, like just things to help you better your life or at least make it more interesting, that kind of thing. And so that's kind of where the narrative is. But same with you. I've kind of gotten to a point where it's like, I've been like sitting like in a room with lighting, right? Yeah. Microphoned up and everything. And then that was the video and then maybe some B-roll. That's completely changed now. I like go outside for a lot of the shots, right? I'm like taking my bag with my camera everywhere I go and just like filming.
Yeah.
It's so much more fun. Like it's so much more fun than just like sitting in front of a camera and talking. And that's still like half my video, mind you. So I still love that. But there's something about like going out in the world and just being like, that's where YouTube is, not here. Like that's where it is. Like there's something really cool about that.
Yeah, I think from like an audience standpoint too, I mean, like I think about the content that like I really like resonate with. And I'm like, wow, that was so great to sit through and watch. And yeah, I mean, it's typically not like somebody just sitting in their bedroom. It's like, you know, them going out and living life. I was a big fan when Casey Neistat was like kind of doing daily vlog stuff. Yeah. And like, I remember his videos and just like always, you left with like a feeling watching his videos. And I just saw it today. He was moving back to New York. So I was so excited. But I love that idea of just like going out and YouTube being wherever life takes you.
Yeah, that is nice, right? Because it's like, I mean, what do you want to see anyway, right? Like someone probably living their life to their full extent. And yes, that may be like a really interesting idea or concept in their room and they talk to a camera. Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's still a huge part of YouTube. But I think a lot of it as well is like, what are you doing outside? Like, what does that look like? Like you're doing this specific thing. What does that look like in the real world? Like, I want to see that because that is not something that is captured on a day-to-day for the individual, right? It's very rare that they document whatever is they're going through or whatever, you know, maybe vacation they're on or something. Yeah. Very rare that happens. So it's kind of cool going into this. And I really like it. Like, I don't think I'm going to change it. Like, this kind of more, again, more cinematic, more narrative-based videos.
Yeah.
Super fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so we're running out of time here, but I just want to end on a note like this for, again, for raising plants. Can you attempt to describe the feeling of successfully raising a plant? What is that, like, gratification? Like, what does that actually feel like? Is it ever done, by the way? Let's start there.
Yeah, I would definitely say it's never done because I've had so many plants where, you know, I've grown them for a long time and I've gotten them to look, you know, kind of how like I always dreamed of them looking. They're super full and they're super lush. And then you like turn your head for 30 seconds and all of a sudden it's like dying in the corner. So I think it's ever evolving and there's not really an end game with plants, but I think that's okay. And I think it's, you know, again, it's like everything in life, like, there's ups and there's downs and things will happen unexpectedly that you didn't anticipate. And that's kind of just like the beauty of the hobby. So yeah, I don't know if that answers your question.
I love that. Yeah. Well, again, like, is there kind of a success factor to it? Is there a point ever in this plant's life where you're like, I did it. Like, it went through the full cycles, that kind of thing. Does that ever happen?
Yeah, you know, I think for me recently, I kind of mentioned this at one point, but I've been getting more into getting my plants to bloom. And I think for me, sometimes it's kind of like full circle. Like, I've gotten it to kind of go through its full life cycle. And that can definitely be a really gratifying thing. And just in general, I mean, like I said, you start out with a little tiny plan. And I think even just looking back at the progress, similar to what we were talking about with YouTube, I take a lot of pictures of my plants. They're like kids, you know. If you open up my phone, I'm like, oh, let me show you pictures of all my plants. But I constantly look back at, you know, like a year ago, 2 years ago, and I'm like, wow, that plant was really that small. Like, I really got it to grow this big. And I think for me, those are like the really gratifying moments of kind of looking at where it started and looking where it came. And yeah.
Wow. That's very beautiful. Yeah. Well, thanks so much for joining me. Can you tell everyone like where to find you, the YouTube channel, Instagrams, all of that?
Yeah. Well, I'm pretty much everywhere at Leave Me Alone Plants, Leave Me Alone Plants, YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, leavemealoneplants.com. And if you're interested in non-plant stuff, you can find me on LinkedIn, Caitlin Filippi. And thank you so much for having me on. This is great. It was fun.
Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. Till next time, everyone.